Home of the Stars. Home of the Stars. Through the airwaves and on the big Home of the Stars. Through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. This is your Tuesday night episode, and I'm thrilled to tell you we've got a spectacular show. We have the number one best-selling award-winning author, founder of The Whimsical World of Sherry Fink, and an inspirational speaker. Sherry Fink is going to be joining us in just a couple of moments. But before we bring Sherry on, I want to give you the roadmap for the week in case this is your first time to tune in for the night or for the week. Last night on the show, we had celebrity chef John Polk talking about his 50-pound weight loss this year and his journey from going from a celebrity chef that eats a lot to a fit celebrity chef that is still making delicious dishes. So I encourage you to check out the replay on YouTube. And tomorrow night on Wednesday's show, we've got Super Gay Radio with Mr. Rob Watson returning to the show for our monthly Super Gay updates and his latest Letters to segment that he's always stirring up controversy for. And on Thursday, we've got Carol Ramsey taking your calls. And on Friday, we're going to be doing a special Halloween episode, doing the top 20 countdown of this year's Halloween songs. You wonder where which sister's Halloween is going to place in that? I don't know. But I made the list so you can take a wild guess what might be number one. Now, without further ado, I always like to say that, I'm going to be bringing Sherry Fink on the line. Sherry creates books, products, and experiences that inspire and delight kids of all ages while planting seeds of self-esteem. All of her five children's books were number one best-selling books on Amazon.com. That includes The Little Rose, which has a number one bestseller for over 60 weeks. That's over a year. Did you know there's 52 weeks in a year, and 60 is more than 52? For over a year, she's been a number one bestseller on Amazon. And I'm going to go on and on and on, but I don't want to embarrass her and have her leave the line. So I'm just going to say, Sherry, welcome to the show.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so excited to actually get a chance to talk to you. I met you very briefly. I always do the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon. And I got the chance to meet you very, very briefly at the Southern California Writers Conference this past month, courtesy of Jeff Michaels and Jill and all the other people that were there. But we got a chance to visit, I think, after the conference was over and everybody was sitting around having lunch. But I just said, hi, I want to take your picture with, you know, all these people. And you were like, who is this guy? And I said, it's okay. And then afterwards, we connected on social media. And it's like, wow, we've got Sherry Fink. She's like this phenomenon. And I'm so excited that you've taken time out of your day to be here.
Thank you. So, I'm excited to be here.
So before we get to the – because we're really here to talk about your new project called Cake in Bed, and we're going to talk all about that. But before we do that, I need to know all about your journey as a writer and how you ended up with all these books on Amazon. This is really cool. Where did you start?
You know, probably like most writers, I started randomly. I accidentally became a writer and an author initially. I was in the corporate world for over 12 years, and I did online marketing, and I had worked my way up and, you know, changed companies and got promoted, and I kept thinking, oh, the next job is that's going to be more fulfilling, and I had a lot of wonderful experiences and perks and all those things I thought I wanted, but then when I got to the top of that ladder, I realized it was up against the wrong wall. During that time, I was doing a lot of soul searching because I was thinking, gosh, I've worked so hard. I mean, I went to school, I got a master's degree in this type of work, and what am I going to do? So during that experience, I had a gift of adversity, and I was being bullied in the workplace by another woman.
Oh.
And I know, and it happens so much more than you think, too. Like, that's something I've really learned is, like, sharing your story. So many people are affected by that experience, but I was being bullied, and I had tried everything. I was just feeling, like, so desperate to change a situation, but I had worked too hard to run away, you know? So I was driving to work one day, and I was crying, and I didn't want to go, and I was like, God, this isn't me. This isn't like me at all. And I just had this moment of surrender where I thought, I will do anything to make the situation better. And at that moment, when I had no more ego about it and I had surrendered, I had this idea come to me about a little rose that grows up in a weed bed and thinks that she's the weed. And then, I know, it was so powerful. It wrote through me in the car. Like, I had to grab bits of paper out of my purse. The Little Rose, my first book, was initially written on the back of an envelope with a mini golf pencil. Yeah. And I wrote it at stoplights and on the way to the office. And I had never had an experience like that before. And I didn't know it was a children's book. I had no idea. But I made a decision that day that 1 year from that date, I would either be working for someone else or I'd be doing my own thing, which I had no idea what that could be, or I'd be doing consulting of some sort. So, a year later, I left that job. I went to a conference. I had a seemingly random conversation, and this lady started asking me about writing, and I was like, gosh, I only write business and marketing. It's really boring. She said, no, you've got more. And so I remembered that story, and I told her, and she said, I just got goosebumps. You have to do something with that because my grandchildren need that message. And that was the first time I thought, maybe it's a children's book. And
You're freaking me out. I've got goosebumps having you tell me this.
It happens a lot, actually.
Oh, my Lord. So when you had this conversation with this lady, what happened next? Where did you go from there? Because it obviously, it's not just like you blink your eyes like I Dream a Genie and magically the little rose is number one on Amazon. What happens?
The idea of having a book and having a children's book especially like scared me because I was so raw about that story. You know, I felt embarrassed to talk about the bullying. And yet, I had this feeling about it. You know that juicy, delicious, mm-hmm. like, I can't stop thinking about it feeling? I had that. And it was so tantalizing. And I thought, gosh, what if I could take that experience and make it into something really powerful for kids so that maybe they don't have to go through the struggle that I went through? And when I got home, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just like, I am just loving this story. I mean, I had no idea, because you don't really know, because it's adults that write kids' books. And there's probably like all these fantastic stories behind them, but you're the first children's author that I've ever had on the show in 4 years. So this, knowing the backstory of how this all comes about is really fascinating to me, because you just think you're going to pick up, the little rose and, here's this cute little story. But there's really like this, drama and intrigue that happened behind it.
There really is. And I think that's a key that I've learned, is that you have to follow that inspiration because it's in some way it's a divine inspiration. And it led me on my path and I had no idea. I mean, when I was little, I made my own books all the time. I was always in my own little world. I was creating, all kinds of things. But I stopped doing that because I grew up very, very poor and I wanted to, overcome the circumstances in which I was born. So I thought, oh, I'll do really well in school, and that'll enable me to go to college. No one had ever gone to college in my family. Mm. So I focused so much on that, I let go of all the creativity, and then I had this explosion of it after that incident. And, I got home from that conference, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I thought, why not? Just do it. Just try. Just go for it, even though I was so scared. And I did it really fast. I chose to go independent because I knew if I had taken the traditional route, which takes so much longer, I would chicken out. And I had so much passion behind the story, I needed to get it out quickly because I wanted kids to know now. I didn't want to wait 3 years when the market was right and all that jazz. I wanted to get it out now so kids could know how precious they are and not to settle for less than what they deserve. Like, I really wanted them to know that. So within 6 months, I published the book, and weeks later, it went number one on Amazon, and it changed my entire life.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited for it. Okay, can I okay, so you wrote the book, and I don't want to simply, I want you to kind of go through the process, because, you know, you just say, oh, I just wrote this book, but, you know, I'd love for you to tell us about the process, but also then, you know, how do you go from writing the book to say, okay, for a children's book, we've got to have some really cool, you know, pictures and drawings and animation here to, you know, bring the story to life for kids. How did you pick who you worked with for that?
Oh, my gosh. So everything, once I got on that path, once I decided I'm definitely doing it, I started being very bold. I started getting out and asking people like I never did before. You know, I was out of my comfort zone every single day, just like I am now. It's just a whole other level now. But but I started, like, I knew I needed an illustrator, because a children's picture book, I think it's 50-50, right? It's 50% illustration, 50% writing. So I knew that was really critical. And I have a bias toward quality work. I only want to create the best. Like, that was really important to me. So I started asking everyone I knew, who do you know who illustrates books? Who do you know who does art? Who do you know who might be interested in this project, or know someone who could be a good fit? And because I had helped so many people in my corporate career and never asked for anything, people went way out of their way to try to connect me with artists. So I ended up interviewing 8 people who were recommended to me. And I basically told them what I was doing. I gave them the story. We talked about how even in the heartbreaking moments, I want it to feel hopeful. I never want that child to feel abandoned by the story or the character. And it was interesting what I got back, because I asked for character sketches, and the rest of them, you could just tell they weren't it. It just wasn't it. And then the woman that ended up becoming my illustrator, Mary Erickson Washam, she not only did a character sketch, but she did a thumbnail, like thumbnails of the entire story. So a little sketch, and I could see it and I could feel it. And as soon as I got it, I just started crying. I was like, oh my gosh, I found her. I will do whatever it takes to work with her. And I didn't know what I was doing. So, you know, so it basically asked a lot of questions, and I learned as I went, and we created our own little partnership the way that we wanted to work together. And it was just so beautiful. And yeah, that's pretty much how everything worked for me, is I just asked, and then the right person felt it. I knew it when I saw it, and I went with it. And it was scary, and I was investing my own money in it, you know, so it's, and I was doing something completely different and sounded bonkers to the people I worked with in the corporate world, but I'm okay with that. I had a vision.
I'm telling you, this is, I love the story here. So when, you know, you released this on Amazon, I mean, what kind of PR did you put behind this to get this to go to number one in 2 weeks? Because that's, at that point, you're an unknown. You've never done anything like this before. And all of a sudden, it goes, boom, to number one. That is a spectacular story in itself. But what happened? Did you, you know tons of people, ask, you know, people to write reviews? What did you do?
Well, you know, it's funny, is I kind of launched it quietly, because I was planning to do a big launch in July. It came out March 22nd, 2011, and I was planning a big launch for July. So I wasn't really doing major marketing, no advertising, none of that stuff. But what I was doing before the fact was I was going to all these events. Like, any time I'd have opportunity to go and speak or meet people, I would go and I would share my dream. You know, I'd say, I'm Sherry, and I'm working on a book that's going to help kids with their self-esteem, and I want to be a best-selling author because I feel like that's going to get the book into the hands of more kids. And I was so scared. Like, every time I did that, my knees would be shaking and my voice would be quivering. I wasn't really... You know, I was sure it's what I wanted, but I wasn't sure if other people would be receptive, and nobody laughed. Like, people are like, oh, okay, well, I know this person. Why don't you talk to that person, you know? And so I had all these amazing calls with people who were best-selling authors, and, you know, sometimes it would just be 15 minutes, but I would ask them, what did you do that worked? What would you not waste time on? And then based on the goal that I have, who else do you think I should talk with?
Oh.
And those were my questions. And so when the book came out, when I did a soft launch, you know, when it was available on Amazon, I sent out an email thanking all the people again. I had already sent them thank you notes, but
right.
but I just said, you know, my dream is coming true because of you. And here it is on Amazon. Like, can you believe it? And those people, without any prompting from me, ordered the book and shared it with people.
Oh.
And I could never predict
awesome.
That. Yeah. So people, like amazing people, made that dream come true. It had nothing to do, like, it was just, it was, I think you, when you're on your path and you're doing the right thing and you
yeah.
come from the right place,
mm-hmm.
it can't help but align for you. And that sounds very woo-woo and magical, but sometimes the world is that way.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you have this best-selling book. You've probably, you know, gone off to Bora Bora for, like, months of just relaxation and just, you know, hanging out while your book is number one, and you just sit back and just let it all roll in. So, but in all seriousness, you know, you get your book out there. It's number one months before you're expecting it. What do you do next? How do you follow that up, and what kind of a time frame did you give yourself any deadlines?
Oh, yeah. I'm very deadline-driven because I'm running this as a business.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make an ROI on things. You know, it's a very artistic, creative side, but then there's also a very strategic aspect to it. And I've learned, like, over the past 5 years to be more disciplined with the timing of things. And I thought, okay, I have a number one best-selling book, and now I'm going to help kids with their self-esteem, check the box. Like, that was my goal. And then within, I don't know, like a month of that book coming out and doing PR constantly, I mean, even now, like, I have media interviews every single week. Like, I just do it all year round. Anyone that wants to talk to me, you know, I'm happy to talk to them. So it's a lot of work. That doesn't ever get old for me. I love it. But another idea came about a month or two after The Little Rose came out, and that was for The Little Gnome. And I thought, no, like, I'm just going to have one book. Like, I'm, you know, like, I'm busy. I'm still promoting this book. Like,
right.
you know, I started working with a nonprofit. Like, you know, I started doing things that I really wanted to do, like being a spokesperson. And I was like, no, I'm already living my dream. But then this other idea came, and I was like, oh, I'll just write it down. And I wrote it down, and I fell in love with it. And I said, okay, I guess I'm going to have two books. So the same day that The Little Rose came out, 1 year later, The Little Gnome came out.
Oh, my gosh.
And The Little
okay.
Gnome, you know, The Little Gnome was still, many of my fans say it's their favorite book. So it's just, it's fascinating. And then after The Little Gnome came out, or maybe right before, it was when we were creating it, because at the very last second, I had my designer create a logo for a brand. And we published The Little Gnome with that brand on it, and that was called The Whimsical World of Sherry Fink. And the reason that was created was because people were approaching me about all kinds of things. Like, they were saying, have you ever thought about having your characters printed on fabrics? Have you thought about getting them licensed onto notebooks? How about lunchboxes? How about this? How about that? And I thought, oh, I need a brand. I need something.
Yeah.
I need some kind of umbrella to keep everything under. And then The Little Rose, we adapted it for the stage, so it's now a play available worldwide. So there's just all these things. And then I had another idea and another idea, and now I have 5 children's books, 2 albums, a small beauty line. You know, it's just, I think that the constant for me is complete panic because I'm doing something that feels crazy. But I feel so inspired, I can't not do it.
Do you ever look back at that horrible lady that caused you grief and just go, I'm so glad you came into my life?
You know, I have a lot of compassion for people, and I see it as an enormous gift. But I think it's like anything else in life. If you don't choose to use it as a gift, you know, it doesn't come to fruition. So, yeah, I know that there's no other way I would ever be doing this. I would never have gotten to that point where I got out of my head enough
mm-hmm.
to trust my heart without that incident. I would never have done it.
I'm grateful for you because, you know, while you're going through it, you're like, oh, my gosh, what have I done to deserve this? And until you have that moment in the car where you're crying and writing notes with your, you know, golf pencil on the back of an envelope, and your life changes. And, it, you know, here you are, you know, 3 or 4 years later, and you are this now, you're a media empire, basically, for all the things that you're doing. So when you were writing, so we're going to switch gears in just a couple of minutes and start talking about Cake in Bed, because that's, I can't wait to talk about that. But from a children's book standpoint, when you had the idea for The Little Rose, that came really easily. Then you wrote The Little Gnome, that came very easily. And by the way, if I'm taking a look at your author's page on Amazon, it looks like all of your release dates, except for Exploring the Garden with the Little Rose, it's now strategically all released on March 22nd. So that must be like your big win day for all of those. So very cool. How do you get to The Little Seahorse and A Little Firefly and say, I've got a new message or a new idea? Where does that come from? And what's your writing process like? Because, the first one came so easy. How does book 2, 3, 4, and 5, get onto paper for you?
Well, for each of them, I saw the character first.
Okay.
Like, I knew, like, the little gnome, I could see his face. I could see he's like a little boy, and he's got the rosy cheeks and the yellow hat, and I could just see him. And then the fireflies, I was just thinking about, when I was writing The Little Gnome, it's about seasons and about adapting to change and looking for the good, even if you don't know what's going on. And I was thinking about the four seasons I grew up with when I lived in Virginia, and now in California, we have a much more subtle transition of seasons. And I thought, what's the thing I miss the most about Virginia? Because I love California so much. And I thought, it's the fireflies. Because we don't have the light-up variety here in Southern California. And I thought, wow, what would it be like for a kid who's never seen a firefly to see one for the first time? And when I tell kids here that they exist, they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, no, there's an insect and its butt lights up. Like lots of them. It's amazing. And they're like, what? A flashing light insect? Like, they're like, yeah, whatever, kid.
Uh-huh.
But it's so cool. And I thought, what if she was the last one to glow? What would that feel like? And I know a lot of kids go through that because they really want to play a sport and they're not qualified yet, or maybe they're not tall enough yet, or, there's lots of things like that. And so that's how that one came about. And then for the seahorse, always been enamored by them. They are the most magical creature, the most magical real creature. And I started doing a little research into them, and I ended up going to Hawaii, and I went to the Ocean Rider Seahorse Farm, where it's the only place on Earth where you can hold them. Well, they really hold you, but it was so amazing. And I thought, gosh, what if he was so shy? Because they're very polite creatures. Like, if another fish is coming by to get the food, they'll let the other fish have it. They're like, oh, okay, go ahead. And because they can't control their trajectory very well, they're not like big swimmers. They're more floaters. Mm-hmm. They're kind of pushed around by the world in a way. And they're really interesting. And I thought, well, what if he was really bashful? Because I grew up really shy. Like, I had my own inner world that was very active and outgoing, but I was, not outwardly very expressive or, talkative or anything like that. So I thought, well, what if this little seahorse wants to bring a gift home for his mom and he can't, he's afraid to speak up. He's got to learn how to make friends. He's got to learn how to ask for help. And so that's how Little Seahorse came about.
I think I need to go buy all of your books, because each of the books, you have a message that I need to hear. So I'm going to have to go read these after we get off the air today. So thank you for sharing the story of that. But so now you've written all these great kids' books, and you are very successful in doing this. Again, number one for 60 weeks. Every book has been number one on Amazon, worldwide acclaim. You've been on, you're compared with Dean Koontz for top three authors in the local area, Reader's Awards, all that kind of stuff. So how do you say, I'm going to go from writing, cute kids' books with a meaningful message to writing an adult novel?
It's something I never thought I would do. If you told me 5 years ago it would go that direction, I wouldn't have believed you. But something happened, I guess 3 years ago, I got divorced. And I just had this experience of dating in Los Angeles, or dating period, for the first time ever as an adult, because I didn't really date much as a teenager. And it's so interesting. And I had some experiences that inspired me to think, gosh, you know, there's got to be a deeper meaning here. And I ended up, one morning I had a business call, and I woke up like 15 minutes before, which is very unlike me. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to be on this call for an hour and a half. I have to eat something. I go run upstairs, and I'm like, what do I have? What do I have? And I remember the day before I had just decorated this huge mermaid cake. And I thought, oh, let me just get some cake. So I put the cake in the thing. I ran back downstairs. I get on the conference call. I'm in my pajamas, in the bed, with the covers up, balancing the bowl of cake, right? And I'm on the call like, yes, yes, that's correct. And then I mute it, and I'm eating cake, and I'm like, hee, 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 I'm so sneaky, you know. And later that day, I was on the phone with my best friend, and I told him about it. And I said, yeah, I was eating cake in bed during my call, and it was awesome. And he said, cake in bed. That sounds like a great title for a book or a movie. And that's all we talked about. Like, that's it. We never talked about that again that day. And I couldn't stop thinking about it all weekend. All I could think about was cake in bed. That is amazing, you know. And then I looked and nobody had it. And I thought, oh, I'm going to buy a domain. And then I saw the opening scene of the heroine. She's sad. She's divorced. And it would have been her one-year wedding anniversary. So she's eating the frozen cake. But she's by herself. And she's wearing the dress. You know, she's a mess. And I just thought, I need to tell this story. Like, I just think that's so powerful. It's very cinematic when I see it, and I couldn't not write it. So I've been working on it for 2.5 years, and it's very different than writing a children's book, you know, and it's a lot harder. And maybe because it's my first one, I'm not really sure. It's just a lot harder. Because with a children's book, you have the challenge. Like, it's you're trying to convey, at least for me, I'm trying to describe the experience and the scenery so well that the child can feel through the character, but feel safe while they're doing it. And with the romance novel, it's similar, but you can be more daring and you get a lot more words to do it. And so you can weave in a lot more nuance, and it's got heartbreaking moments and a lot of humor in it too. So it handles it in a way that is hopeful throughout the entire thing. And I think like just a few weeks ago, I realized, I was like, wow, when I write the children's books, my intent is to inspire and delight kids while planting seeds of self-esteem. And when I wrote this book, my intention was to inspire and delight women to believe in themselves and not settle for less than they deserve in life or love. Mm. So I'm really doing the same thing. It's just a different channel and a different audience.
What I love the fact that you continue to use the word inspire, and you know, and to change the world, because I think that that is one of the things that I resonate with. So even if I'm not going to be a woman and I don't eat cake in bed, I want to read the book and find out more. I want to talk more about the, you know, the characters, how the story kind of evolves and what we're doing there. But from a writing standpoint, you know, as a children's author, you know, have a certain way that you go about this. But when you're writing a novel, which is different than, you know, a much shorter version of, you know, when you're writing a children's book, do you have to set, because you're very deadline driven, do you sit down at like 8 o'clock in the morning and say, I'm not leaving here until I write X number of words, or I'm not leaving here until how do you actually go about writing when you've never done that before? Or at least,
oh my gosh, it's hard as hell.
Okay.
It's so hard. It's like, you know, because I have a lot of ideas, and I'm very attracted to sparkle, so I get distracted easily, you know. So, and I'm running my own business while I'm doing this, while I'm creating this new book. So for me, what I ended up doing was, first I only wrote when I felt inspired, and that was the first 2 years. And I didn't make very much progress. You know, I'd hear a little dialogue in my head, like while I was in the shower or something, and then I would write that down. Or I'd see a scene and I'm like, oh, I got to capture that. So I'd write all that down. But it took forever, it felt like, for me. And so earlier this year, I decided this is the year. In January, I was like, this is it. It's going to be finished this year, whatever it takes. And then I set a deadline of August. I said, I will have it written by August. And what I ended up doing was looking at my calendar and clearing everything that wasn't a huge priority. So if it wasn't a hell yes, I made it a hell no. And a very polite hell no, but I just had to claim my time to create. And what I would do is I would plan that day around it. So I was basically focused on three things: my book, my body, my business. So if it didn't further one of those things, it was a no. So the gym was a yes. Meditation was a yes. You know, that was worth the time. Eating healthy foods, that's worth the time. But if it didn't serve the book or the business, the other things, then I didn't do it. And which felt difficult because you have to let go of things, you know.
I'm writing that down. I think that's a good mantra for a lot of us to have, you know, just to get, you know, clarity and focus. But when, as you, in the writing of the book, because you're very clear about what your goals were, you know, to get you there. But in writing the book, did you learn anything about yourself that surprised you?
Oh, my gosh. I learned all kinds of things about myself. I learned that as disciplined as I am, I have a very hard time like doing the same thing every single day, you know? and I learned to overcome that because what I would do in the difficult times, and that was just about every single day, I would visualize the end result. I would visualize holding the book in my hand. I would visualize having the experience of someone saying it touched their life. I would visualize, you know, the premiere party and everyone having such a wonderful time and like really spoiling and cherishing people with it. And I was thinking, you know, wouldn't it be great if this was a book that when someone read it, they immediately wanted to start over again. They wanted to read it again because of the way it lit something up within themselves. And so when I do that, then I'd say, okay, I can sit here for another hour, you know, and then I would write the big scenes, the ones that had the most emotional impact. And then the harder thing was writing the in-betweens. So getting them from this point to that point, you know, and doing it in a way that doesn't feel like it's just a throw-in. So I would set little rewards for myself. So if I woke up and wrote for, you know, 2 hours, or I accomplished the number of chapters I wanted to do that day, or the difficult scene that was, you know, something I'd been postponing, then I would reward myself by letting myself go on Facebook. And, you know, I love Facebook. I love connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So I would use that as a carrot for myself.
Oh, how smart.
I bribe myself all the time.
Yeah. So I love the fact that you were as disciplined as you are, but how hard was it for you to set those goals for yourself, saying if I write 2 hours or write the number of chapters or write whatever? Because, you know, when you're self-employed or self, you're a self-creative, meaning you're not, you know, going to some corporate office to work for the man or work for the woman, and they've got their checklist of things that you've got to do that day. How do you come up with your own set of parameters to keep you focused to get to the point where you're going to say, okay, I've done what I'm supposed to do, now I can do Facebook?
Well, this is going to sound kind of geeky, but the truth is I look at the date I want it done, and then I backtrack.
Okay.
So I knew I wanted to be done by August. So I knew in order to do that, like the typical romance novel is about 60,000 words. And I knew I did not have 60,000 words. So I deducted the number I had from the number I needed. And then I came up with a number, and I said, okay, well, in order for me to hit that goal, I need to average this number per week.
Wow.
And then I would challenge myself to hit or exceed that goal. And I'm really big fan of under promise, over deliver.
Yes.
So when I finished it, I guess it was like 1 a.m, the night before I left for Comic-Con, which is in July, I was a month early. And I was over the moon. What a relief. And then that first night at Comic-Con, I had so much fun, but then I was like, wow, I'm not in bed with my laptop tonight. What are my characters doing? This is weird. I was like, I missed them. I had been with them every single night since January, you know? So it was really interesting. Like, oh, okay, now I get to have a little bit of a break.
So when you wrote the book, Cake in Bed, and we're going to talk about the campaign that you've got, all of that coming up. So everybody, stay tuned, because you're going to find out some really cool things that you can get by supporting the cause and pre-ordering your book, Cake in Bed, by our VIP guest superstar, Sherry Fink, today. But do you, you know, as a writer, you know, it's really a two-part question here, Sherry. Did you know from the time that you were writing that opening scene, did you know what the end of the book was? That's number one. And then number two, What do you do when you get stuck in the middle of the stuff?
Well, I knew I don't want to reveal anything.
No, so don't reveal anything. So, you know, don't tell us anything.
I knew the end scene, but I didn't know how it was going to get there.
Okay.
But I could see the final scene in my mind, yes. So I knew where I was going, and then I did everything to get them there. But it wasn't like, I don't write chronologically or linearly at all. I'm kind of wild in my writing. I'm just like whatever feels right in that moment, or if I have to fill in a spot, that's the more difficult thing for me. And I would create a little bit bigger reward for myself. So it was like, because I didn't do a lot of social things during that period, which was hard, you know, because I love being around people. But I say, okay, if you can write this scene, which I know would be emotionally challenging, then you can go to dinner with your friend tonight.
Wow.
Always making deals with myself.
I think that's really, you know, because one of the things that I found interesting at the writers' conference a few weeks ago is that, you know, every writer that I had a chance to visit with, they would all, you know, share their struggles of, you know, different aspects of writing whatever particular book, or, you know, if there are a series of books, you know, what do you do with that character when they get into these situations all the time? And, you know, one author says, well, I always do this with the character, but, you know, that's getting old, so I'm going to have to figure out something else to do with them in the future books. And, you know, so you would hear the different, you know, struggles that they had. And I'm going to be honest, I don't think I had anybody tell me, you know what, I'm going to, you know, put those carrots out there for myself. If I get this done, I can go do this. If I do this, I can do that. And I love the reward system that you're describing that you used for yourself. Because, I mean, as somebody that comes from a sales background, I respect that a lot, because it's like, okay, now I get to do because I did. So I'm really excited to see the book. So let's talk now. So you have, as a marketer, and I love that you've been a marketer all your life too, you now have on sherryfink.com, you've got this beautiful pre-order cake in bed and get sweet rewards campaign. Tell us a little bit about all of the cool stuff that you're doing to make this dream a reality.
Okay, so I'm really excited about this, because when I decided in January that I would finish Cake in Bed this year, I decided I wanted to publish it in 2016. And I thought, what would have to happen to make my success inevitable? And to build a community of enthusiasts along the way. Because my fan base, they're into inspiration, they're into love, they're into all those things, but they're used to receiving it in a certain way from me. And so I don't want to take that for granted and assume, oh, everybody's going to come along on this journey with me, because they may not. So I wanted a way to connect with fans and build a new community around the new book. So I decided that the best way for me to do that and to raise funds to create the book and again, have very high quality, like excellent editor, beautiful cover, you know, great quality printing, all of that, I needed to find a way to get resources, basically, in order to do it by that timeline and not to wait forever and just procrastinate out of fear. So I decided to go with Kickstarter. Kickstarter is the world's leading crowdfunding platform. And if the listeners don't know what crowdfunding is, it basically is a way for people to pre-order something or to pledge to support a product or an idea and get rewards in exchange for that, and get to be like in my case behind the scenes, because you see behind the scenes on DVDs about movies, you know, sometimes we get to see that, or you see the artist in the studio creating their album, but how often do you get to see the behind the scenes of finishing a book? You know, it's kind of mysterious, like nobody, if you're not already doing it, you don't really know what it entails. So I thought, well, that's something I can offer, is to show people, like, this is my roller coaster, welcome, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I decided to do this campaign on Kickstarter, and what was really important to me was that it reward people. I want them to feel like they're getting something really amazing for what they're purchasing, you know, what they're putting in. So I created rewards packages that I thought would honor and inspire and, you know, do all those, help other people's dreams come true. And be fun, because that's just, at the end of the day, that's really, really important to me, too. So Yeah, so we launched this Kickstarter campaign, and we have just a few days left. And when people pre-order their book, they get all kinds of bonus rewards. And then when we hit certain milestones in the campaign, everybody gets an extra bonus. So that's been pretty exciting, too, to gamify the tiers.
I love this. I, you know, at the end of this entire journey here, Sherry, you really should write another book. How to market yourself as a writer or an author or, you know, creative ideas, because I think you're totally on the right track. I'm looking at your Kickstarter page right now, and you've got a ton of money that's already been pledged. You're really close to your goal. I'm very excited to see that. What are some of the perks or rewards that you're offering to the people who are supporting Cake in Bed?
Ooh, okay. So it starts from everything as basic as the ebook version that of your choice, like Kindle Nook or iTunes. And then, of course, there's a limited edition Kickstarter exclusive paperback book. And then from there, it gets, I think, even more fun, where you can be acknowledged in the book. You can actually name a character in the book on a certain level. Some of the packages include tickets to the Cake in Bed World Premiere Party in Hollywood in February. And that, oh my gosh, like, it's going to be so magical. I can't reveal the details, but I can't wait. It's going to be so amazing. And we already have half the tickets accounted for. So that's been incredible, too.
On Facebook, though, you have released a couple of details about your launch party. Can you tell us? I'm going to stop myself from asking this question first. I want to go back. Why red velvet cake? Because I thought that was, other than the fact that it pops in the picture, is there a reason why that you selected red velvet cake for the book?
You know what? There's something about red velvet. It doesn't look like, from the outside, it looks like a normal cake.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you cut into it and you taste it, it's like, it looks different. It's distinctive, but very different, and not that common in certain parts of the country and certain parts of the world. Like, it seems to be a more southern U.S. thing, and I grew up in the South, so that was a part of it. And then when you taste red velvet, it's like a delicate dance between chocolate and, I just don't know how to describe it. It's like, there's something very special about it. If someone puts a taste of red velvet in your mouth, you know it's red velvet, right? There's no other cake that tastes like that.
Right,
and I
right.
thought, that's like my main character. She may look ordinary, but she's not.
But
she has
end,
a lot of depth to her, but not everyone can appreciate that. Only people who are, you know, it's like, it's. And I thought, that's the perfect cake for this. And cake in bed has a lot of other meanings, of course. It's a very sexy book, but it, at the end, like the very, very big picture, like it means absolute bliss. And I believe everyone deserves that. And I think we create that for ourselves. And that's something that my character learns along the way.
So as far as Cake in Bed goes, you've got this really fun thing that you're throwing out on social media right now about taking pictures in bed with cake. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Okay, so I'm calling it My Cake in Bed Moment, and the way it works is that you take a picture of yourself with cake in bed, and it can be as fun or as flirty as you want it to be. Actually, Garrett, yours is one of my favorites. It's so amazing. But you just take a picture of yourself with cake in bed. It could be with your friends, could be with your spouse, could be with your dog, could be solo. People are very creative, and I love that. And then you post it on social media with hashtag Cake in Bed and www.cakeinbed.com. And then after October 31st, which is the end of the campaign, I will randomly select a winner, and the winner will receive 2 VIP tickets to the world premiere party. And that's going to be really,
really,
really sweet.
Cool. Okay, so that's my little circle back to the VIP party. I know that you said that you can't release a lot of details, but on social media you have shared some of the things that are going to be happening. Can you kind of give us a rundown on an overview of what's involved, also what tickets are going for, and how people can, you know, basically support the cause or find out more?
Absolutely. So when you first arrive at the event, which is at an undisclosed location right now, but it will be in Hollywood, you will walk the red velvet carpet. There will be photographers. There will be lots of opportunities for photo ops. There will be basically everyone that walks through that door is going to feel treasured and loved and adored. Mm. Everything that night is geared toward that, to spoiling the attendees. There's going to be a sweet swag bag. There's going to be food. There will be, of course, cake. There will be champagne. There will be lots of pampering. And there will be a reading from the book. But the focus is really on making everyone there feel so decadent and alive. And my theme is going to be very old school Hollywood glamour. And we may have a few special guests. There will be entertainment and probably of the musical and dancing variety. And I'm just so excited. I can't wait.
This will be so much fun. I can't wait to see all of that come about. Going back to the Kickstarter campaign, we've got probably about another 5-7 minutes left in our hour today. I just want to kind of go through the pledges or the rewards for the listeners here. Because again, you can go out and spend a lot of money and get like the super deluxe version of everything, but you can get a pledge for $2 or more and have a great experience there. The next level is $12. You go to $25, $65, $100, $250, $500, $1,000, $2,500, or $5,000. So, from $2 on, you can help support Cake in Bed. There's a link on the show page right there for you to see. It will say, visit the Kickstarter campaign. Just click here. Everything that you need to click on is hyperlinked for you. So you just click those links, and it's going to take you everywhere. And I will strongly encourage you to go support this because this is cool. I will also let you know that Sherry's books that she's written that are on Amazon are also featured on the Rated G Radio Superstar Swag page on Amazon. There's a link for that there. All of her books are prominently displayed on page one. We've also, of the book category, but I've also created a separate category now just for children's books. And right now Sherry's books are right there. So you just go bing, 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 and you can buy them all tonight and have them sent to you. So I'm going to encourage you to help support the cause there as well. Sherry, as we get ready to kind of wind our time down here, outside of writing, I'm not going to ask you anything like too personal, but outside of writing, what are you really passionate about? What do you like to do?
I love having adventures. I love new experiences. I love live experiences, especially like concerts and sporting events and anything where you can be there and feel the energy of the crowd and the excitement. Comic-Con, that's one of the things I love about that. People are so passionate, and I just love great entertainment, especially things that uplift people. Like, I love to read uplifting things. I love to feel inspiration. I love to create. I love to paint. But my favorite thing of all is connecting with people. That's absolute bliss to me. So, all kinds of things.
So you mentioned that you like to do a lot of reading. Do you have authors that, we're here to plug you, so I want everybody to buy Sherry Fink's books tonight, but do you have authors that you read either growing up or that you read today that you really just kind of are excited about?
Oh, my God, yes. It's a nonfiction book, but not just one book, multiple books. Jack Canfield, he was the co-creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Yeah.
He wrote The Power of Focus, The Success Principles. Like, I just can't get enough of him. He ended up becoming one of my mentors, and he's probably the person that's had the most profound impact on my life from his teachings. I love his work.
I love Jack Canfield, but what about his writing or what about his message just grabs you?
He is authentic. He shares his soul, and not just in his writing, but in his teachings too. He will tell you the mistakes he made. He doesn't pretend to be, some superstar up on a pedestal. He will take himself right off that pedestal and tell you how human he really is. And I love that about him. And you get the sense through his writing as well, is that he believes in infinite possibilities. He doesn't think that you know, oh, it's possible for this person and not for that person, or that person's wrong for doing it that way. It's more like, no, there's enough for everybody. There's abundance in the world. Let's create more, and let's lift up other people too. And I think that one, that message is really clear in his book, The Aladdin Factor, which is all about learning to ask and let go of attachment to the outcome. Very powerful.
Well, but that also just kind of mirrors. Do you think that you resonate with Jack Canfield because that's really kind of a similar message of hope and inspiration that you give to others?
Yes, I definitely think so.
Sherry, real quick, did you ever think that you would grow up to be, you know, I know you said you wrote books as a kid, but, you know, you get to that point in that corporate career. Did you ever really think in your wildest dreams you'd be doing what you're doing today?
No. I mean, I was pretty shy. It was a very interesting transition. But when I was a really little kid, I remember wanting to be a writer, a teacher, a mother, a princess, and a mermaid, and an artist.
And you're all of them now.
Got to do some of those things. Well, I'm not a mother, but, you know, I did get to do all the others. So, and I don't know about the princess, but that's sometimes I get to feel like one.
Okay. So as we get ready to wrap up our time with you today, again, all of the links are right here on the show page for you to go and click and do all of that. But for anybody who's listening either just by telephone, because we get a lot of folks that are doing that tonight as well, or you're listening across the pond on Chat and Spin Radio or Westar Radio Network in the UK, tell us, Sherry, how you'd like people to connect with you on social media and become part of this community that you're creating.
Oh, I would love to hear from your listeners. That's one of my favorite things. So you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/SherryFinkFan and also at facebook.com/CakeInBed. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm @SHERI_FINK. But I'm really, really active on Facebook. And you can find me at my website at www.SherryFinkFan.com. And also, of course, you can pre-order Cake in Bed at CakeInBed.com.
I love that. And any last words to budding writers or just, I'll say anybody. So it can be anybody who wants to do anything from a dream perspective. You've told a very inspiring story today. You've actually kind of given me hope in life. So I'm a little verklempt here about the fact that your story just resonates so much with me. But what would you tell others out there that are in that job or getting bullied, even as adults? You know, you think that sounds silly, but, you know, that happens in jobs. What inspiration would you like to share with others before we let you go tonight?
I would say to always remember that you matter and your dreams are important. And if you don't go after them, they will never come true. Don't let that happen. You know, we only get one chance. Like, get off the sidelines and get in the game. And when you're in the game, play to win, because that's the only thing that matters, is that you give it your best effort and you really go. Go for it. It's worth it. It's scary, I know. But I promise you, you will be so happy that you faced that dragon and won.
I love it. Sherry Fink, my hats are off to you. In extreme gratitude, I'm bowing to you today. Everybody go buy her books that are on Amazon that you can get today. And then once you've done that, do yourself the biggest favor you can for the rest of your year, is go pre-order Cake in Bed and get all of her sweet rewards. Pick the reward category that works best for you and help support an independent author who is making a huge difference in this world. We'll be back tomorrow night with, again, Super Gay Radio with Mr. Rob Watson. And in the meantime, here's my shameless plug for this song, A Little Witch Sisters Halloween. We'll see you live tomorrow.
Ooh, what do we have here?
Met three sisters on the beach alone that Friday night. Gathered near a campfire kiln, their fire burned so bright. They each got up and took their turn, looking me up and down. Can we trust him? Can we tell him? They would circle round. The harvest moon above was full, what showed their scary smiles. Come sit with us, the three agreed, you'll want to stay a while. Smelled real bad. Drink fast. That is the key. Lamour told of fading stars whose looks laid claim to fame. Under knives now mummified, the plastic surgeon's blame. Hag laughed out and spit a tooth when names began to drop. Like zombies of apocalypse in Hollywood, that's hot. Jinx went next and shed her hex upon some movies made. You can't cast witch without the kitsch their empire soon would fade.
Been listening to Rated G.